Welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today I am very blessed to offer such an incredible guest for you today to listen to. It is Sharon Parker, who has written a book called Selling with Soul, Achieving Career Success Without Sacrificing Personal and Spiritual Growth. Sharon has been in a successfully sold high-tech products and services for 25 years. She is a public speaker and trainer of hundreds of salespeople and donates profits from Selling with Soul to educational scholarships for minority students. In 2004, she launched The Sparker Company, a resource offering coaching and professional training, and you can contact her through her website there. It's www.sparkercoaching.com. Sharon Parker, thank you so much for being my guest today on Unlimited Realities. How are you?
I'm fine and very happy to be here, Lisa. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, my pleasure. This is a wonderful book because so many times there's this assumption of sales and selling that comes across a little bit harsh and kind of sacrificing integrity many times. And I think that what you have done in working within sales and being a successful saleswoman, that you've taken your 25 years plus experience and really created this book for people who are going out there. Because like you say in the book, you know, our society, our humanity depends upon salespeople. So I did chuckle a little bit in regard to your experience as you were telling a story of you sitting down with a career recruiter, and your first reaction was looking at your attire and how you dressed yourself when they advised you to take a job in sales because you were horrified and you thought, what am I wearing that makes me look sleazy? So I thought I absolutely laughed out loud. So tell us a little bit about what your first reaction to the advice in regard to the job in sales was, and why did you feel that way?
Well, I had that same stereotype about salespeople, you know, living inside my heart and my head as our society does. I thought, oh, it's a less than honorable profession. You know, it's just where people are driven by their own self-interest and do whatever it takes and don't let the truth get in the way. And then when I first started in sales, which was somewhat out of desperation, I was a single parent and I needed a job, that's what I was taught. I was put through a lot of sales training and videotapes and so on. And the mottos that salespeople have thrown around for so many years, like ABC, always be closing, just really put me off. And I struggled with it for a couple of years, doing what I was told to do and just going home every night and feeling bad about my work and bad about myself. And I realized at one point, after talking with a friend, that, you know, I really had a choice. I could keep doing it that way and hate myself, or I could try doing it my way. And if I got fired, I got fired. At least I'd be out of a job I didn't want to do. So I began talking to my customers and asking them questions and interacting with them the way I would interact with a friend I was concerned about, and it made all the difference. I mean, my customers responded with more openness. They were more trusting. We were able to get to the heart of the problem that they were trying to solve. And I was able to go home at night feeling like I had done a good service that day for the people I called on.
Was that a bit of your aha moment where you realized there is a different way of doing this profession?
Very much so. And I had an interesting conversation with a colleague a number of years later who said that he stopped struggling to get out of the corporate world when he realized that his true role was to be a change agent. And and that was another aha moment. I said, aha, yes, the other jobs that I look at with longing, like teaching and social work and counseling and all of those jobs that I thought had intrinsic value. Yes, they do. They have a wonderful intrinsic value, but a lot of people can train and do those jobs, whereas not a lot of people can go into the corporate world and survive it, keeping their
right.
soul intact. So I felt very, very blessed that I was in that role, I was successful in that role, and I could be an agent for change.
And in the agent for change, which you truly are, I mean, one thing that I love about having on my show, and you for certain are one of them, are pioneers. And I love pioneers of thought, people who take something that has been going a specific way for eons and then gives a little tweak and creates this whole other aspect of looking at it from a different perspective. And you're a pioneer to write this book and create a way of presenting selling in a way that actually has soul, heart, and integrity at its core. And it's not something that you run across every day. It's not something that many people within sales are taught to do. Now, in your initial experience with sales, you were told to make cold calls. And that, you know, for any of us listening to that, I mean, myself, I automatically, my stomach starts to churn.
I know what you mean. But
for
some
you,
why,
because...
Some wise salesperson said they call them cold calls because of the chills that run up and down your spine when you're asked to do one.
Right. That makes so much sense, because to me it's a horror experience to make a cold call, because you're pretty much accepting the fact that you may be rejected on the other end of the line. And rejection is not an easy thing to accept for, you know, most anybody, regardless
no,
of what rejection. So how did you feel in having to start off with those cold calls? Was that kind of like the drudgery that when you were going home and you were just not liking what you were doing started to be the impetus to create the change?
Yeah, it was, you know, I was handed a list of a list of phone numbers and company names and told my task was to work my way through that list and make a cold call on each of these people. And I figured I would be diligent, and I just checked them off as I went. And of course, each phone call I made was not interested, click. And I think I was on about call 52 or 53 when the guy on the other end said, "Oh, that sounds interesting, tell me more." And I completely froze. And finally I stumbled out in this little voice, could I call you back? And he said, "Oh, you're new. Yeah, go ahead, call me back." And he became one of my best customers. But I realized that the reason that we hate cold calling is, number one, it's not very effective. I mean, 1 out of 100 people may respond, "Yeah, let's talk." But number two, we all know in our hearts that when we make those calls, we're a stereotype. The person on the other end doesn't know me from Adam, and to them, I'm just a sales stereotype trying to find a way to make money. Whereas when I work with a client, when I work with a customer, I'm way outside that stereotype box. I'm a real person. We have a real communication. We have real relationship, and that's something that I feel so good about, and I feel like I'm doing such a service with my clients. But anytime I'm forced back into that little box, and I know the customer on the other end is thinking, "Oh, geez, another sales button," you know, it hurts. It's painful.
Right.
None of us want to live like that.
Now, in regard to making this tweak, this change, in regard to coming from more of a humanitarian heart and an open soul, wasn't it difficult to challenge the status quo, and did you ever suffer repercussions or setbacks by doing things a little differently than your peer group?
Oh, sure. I got a lot of pressure to push harder, cut prices, close it now, get it done today. And, you know, one of the things you learn after a while is that people buy when they're ready to buy. And tricks and manipulations and suddenly offering a price cut, they don't make people any more ready to buy. They just make them nervous that they're, in fact, being sold. So it's somewhat counterintuitive. And
right.
you learn to work with a client and understand their concerns and stay in alignment with them until they're actually ready to make that commitment, and then you're in it together. But I got a lot of pressure. Some people called me too soft, too emotional, too this, too that. And it was sometimes hard to differentiate whether that was coming from a sexist standpoint or whether it was coming from an anti-humanitarian standpoint. All I knew was that it didn't feel too good. I didn't feel like I was accepted in the team completely.
And were you one of many women, or were you one woman within a sea of men?
Oh, I was definitely in a sea of testosterone. I was usually the first woman doing whatever job I was doing within the corporation. So there wasn't peer support. There wasn't a place where I could go and just share the emotions of what I was up against. So you had to become confident that your inner compass, your moral compass, was the right voice to listen to, because there weren't mentors out there to help guide me in that direction.
And did you find any of your peers watching you from a distance and then starting to follow your lead in regard to being more of a compassionate salesperson?
I did, and that was my great joy. I managed a group of salespeople and watched them change their attitudes toward their career, their attitudes toward their customers, begin treating each other with far more respect, and develop a greater level of job satisfaction. I really, as an agent for change, I'm still seeing today the ripples that affected other people. I still hear from people that, will contact me and say, way back when, I learned from you that I was a person worthy of respect, and, it changed the way I did things.
And did you find that you carried that element through your daily life in other aspects besides your work realm? Did you find yourself becoming more intuitively aware with sensing conversations with people on a personal level? Or did you find any other changes as you started to implement this in your career that started to come out more in your personal life?
Well, what I found was that it was very important for me to be the same person at work that I was at home. Because when those two are out of sync, when you go to work all day and you come home and you change clothes and at the same time you change into a different person, then you know that the work that you're doing during the day is you're not being authentic. You're not really being yourself. So it was very important for me to try to bring those two together. My family life had always been extremely important to me, and my daughter commented recently that she saw the change this way, that it was as though I came home from my job, and in the past I used to take off my armor, and then I would be mom, and, over the years it got to the point where I wasn't wearing armor.
Ah, isn't that a perceptive daughter?
Yes, she is very, she's scary smart sometimes.
That's a good testament to mothering, I would say.
Well, I'm not sure I can take much credit for it, but she sure is a daughter to be proud of.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. You have so many. One thing that I really appreciate in your book is after each chapter, excuse me, I'm going to have a cough here. You give reflective insights at the end of each chapter. Excuse me. And I really like that, because what it does is it brings you right back to the core of really what we're reflecting upon in that chapter. And the one chapter that I felt was really poignant was your reflections in chapter 3. You have first do no harm and the company and the product you represent. And you have a quote here, and it says, "There can be no happiness if the things we believe in are different from the things we do." And you also go on into talking about before choosing whether to change companies or to become a change leader within your present company, God bless you, ask yourself these questions. And you start off with, what is your company's mission statement, and do you agree or disagree with it? I think that's a very powerful insight, because many times people, especially in this economy, will take a job simply just to put food on the table, and they're not really in sync with really the vibe of the company or really the integrity or the intention of the company. And then you have, does the company walk the talk? Are the messages you get from the manager consistent with the priorities indicated by the mission statement? Now, these are things that many times people will come up against in their work day, where they'll be disgruntled or they will feel a sense of frustration, and they may or may not be able to identify what the frustration is. And many times in sales, there's an aspect of following, you know, the path that's already laid out before you. You know, don't reinvent the wheel, just keep going, just keep doing what, you know, has been successful and keep moving on. Meanwhile, the identity is eliminated. Let's go into a little bit of what some sales basics are. And let's start with explaining to the audience in regard to selling as problem solving.
Yeah, but let me just interject here that the conflict, I think, that we see between salespeople and sales managers is often time-based. The sales manager is under tremendous pressure to make a certain number of sales by a certain period in time. And many times that leads them to do things that are actually against their interest long-term. And the other thing I wanted to say is that so many people, whether they're in corporate world or not, I mean, I know so many people that are brilliant therapists, wonderful coaches, great teachers, and they would love to be in business for themselves. But the thing that holds them back is they don't want to feel salesy. And that's the same thing that we go through if we're in business-to-business sales in a corporation. What's the difference between being salesy and selling? And when you mention the basic steps of selling, you know, the very first one, in my mind, is to understand what your customer is trying to achieve. Because if a customer doesn't have a goal, if they don't have a reason to make a change, why in the world would they embrace the pain of change? You know, none of us change unless we feel that the outcome is going to be a better result than what we have today. So that's the first thing. And you can't get there by talking. You can only get there by asking good questions, taking the time to actually listen, and then evaluating whether you think you can help or not.
Right. And oftentimes, people who are going through training for sales, you know, there is that almost a fear and desperation that exists, because oftentimes they're not on a salaried, aspect. They're on a commission aspect. So it's a matter of how much they sell or what they sell in regard to what their paycheck is. So in regard to dealing with an economy today, because we're in this fear-based economy of, you know, it's pumped into the media, it's living in homes and families where parents have lost jobs and they're scraping to get by. Sales is necessary whether you're selling yourself or you're selling a product. And
absolutely.
And it seems like it's the one profession that, myself included, scares the living daylights out of people.
I think that's true across the board. People really are afraid of it because they're certain that they won't feel good about themselves if that's what they do for a job.
Right. Right.
The good news is that it's the easiest job in the world to find. Businesses are desperate for salespeople. I mean, sales jobs, even in the worst economy, are plentiful, unlike many of the other jobs that we think of as being perhaps more important. And that's because sales drives this economy. You know, nothing happens, nobody benefits until something is sold. So whether
right.
you're a manufacturer, whether you're an engineer, no matter what it is, you can make the best product in the world, but unless somebody sells it, it just becomes inventory.
And so what advice would you give a young salesperson or someone starting out in sales today? If you were to summarize in a nutshell, just a little bullet of insight, what would you tell somebody going out on their first cold call or their first sales day?
I would say forget about yourself and your nerves. You're not there to talk. Learn everything you can about that customer and what they're trying to accomplish. And then you put yourself in a position to be of service.
So how important, and that's a wonderful, wonderful insight, how important is it to listen effectively as a salesperson?
Oh, my gosh. It's the most important skill a salesperson can have, and it's also the easiest to forget to use. As soon as a salesperson gets excited about the ways they think they can help or how their products might be of benefit, they start talking. And when we're talking, of course, we're not learning. So listening and asking follow-up questions, really trying to understand not just what the customer is saying but also what they're not saying, is primary. Because if you can't do that, you can't really understand the reason why they would embrace this change.
Right, okay. And so in listening to your client while you are the salesperson selling product or self, would you also be developing more of an awareness or even a bit of an insight or even intuition in regard to how the person is responding and communicating? So my question, I guess, would be, do you find that your listening skills get tweaked a little bit or even a little bit more perfected as you go about your sales calls or your sales days, that you become more intuitive to hearing what the other person is saying, really hearing, not just listening to the words?
Yes, definitely, because the best salespeople are really the best communicators, and they use what I call sales spider sense. They watch the body language. They understand the emotional signals that their customer is sending, and it helps them understand where they should ask another question, you know, where they should go another level in trying to understand, whereas, you know, people who don't use that human connection, who don't make the effort to really understand that person, have a tendency then to jump to a point where they can talk about themselves and their products. And the minute that happens, the minute that the salesperson shifts from, I'm here to understand you and what it is you're trying to get done so I'll know if I can help, the minute they switch from that to, let me tell you about my products and services, they're right back in the stereotype box. You know, if you're observant, you can see the shields go up on the customer. You can see them pull back further in their chair because now they feel they're being sold.
Right, right. And it, you know, it takes a lot of finesse. I mean, it takes a lot of, for the effective, relaxed, casual sale. it takes a lot of finesse on the salesperson's personality aspect and perception to really soften the sale instead of making it a hard sale, would you say?
Yeah, I'm very upfront about the fact that I'm a salesperson and that clearly I'm there because I believe something I offer can help this person. So, you know, I don't try to cover that fact up in any way. But I'm also very honest with the customer early on. If they're describing something I can't help with, I tell them so. And sometimes I'll even refer them to somebody else who has what they need. Because the ultimate goal for salespeople, I think, has to be not winning a sale. It has to be winning a customer. A customer is somebody that you can continue to work with and do business with over the long course of a career. Sometimes just winning a sale is short-term thinking that actually prevents you from seeing other opportunities down the road.
And would that also be something that the salesperson would be aware of, or would that be, immediately, or would that be something that the salesperson through experience becomes more in tune to? Because what I'm seeing in the book is that there's a development that happens within the individual when it comes to their sales skills and expertise. And so they may start out as a newbie and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, all aspects of their insights and awareness and intuition and perception starts to kick in and they start to really look at what they're doing through different eyes. So would you say that through time there is a precision, there's an expertise that really starts to kick in at a certain point within the work realm?
I think it's both. I think some people come into the field with just great intuitive abilities. They read people well. They make people comfortable. They put them at ease. They're just blessed with naturally good communication skills, and they have an easier time making a human connection. But even those people have to get better over time. A lot of what I teach as I work with salespeople is the importance of continually becoming better at what you do. Because the more you practice a skill, whether it's asking questions, whether it's being able to summarize very quickly what you think might help and then getting feedback immediately as to whether the customer thinks that's true, You go from a point of doing it but not doing it gracefully to a point where it's very comfortable and it's a natural part of how you communicate. That only comes from practice. So that's one reason why I structured the book the way it's structured, with questions to think about, questions to write about after you finish different chapters, because we have to go from getting it into our head to getting it into our heart.
I absolutely love that part of your book because that's truly the way that change happens. And you have all this wonderful insight, and it takes your perception in reading each chapter. It takes it out of, you know, the stereotypical belief system that we've all been unfortunately reared with in regard to salespeople. So you're grasping a new concept, your perception shifting a little bit, and then you get to the end of the chapter and you have such great questions to ponder and write down and to validate your truth in those sentences. And then you get to have reflective statements. And I really feel that anybody and you know, sales is important in every business. So I believe that anybody who has their own business or is in sales or wants to sell themselves needs to read this book, Selling with Soul, because it really is a different perspective of how you can succeed in life without sacrificing your integrity. And that kind of brings me to my next question, which is really a great aspect. You consider your book a karma book. Now explain to the audience what that means.
Well, I feel that I learned these lessons in the hardest possible ways.
Right.
I'm a stubborn person. I don't give in easily. And, you know, the universe had to knock me on the head a few times to get me to see that that I could be doing this job in a way that was meaningful. And so my goal in writing the book was really to share those lessons with other people, with other salespeople who are struggling, like I was, to find meaning in what they do. So it's a give back in that sense, because my goal in writing the book is if I could get every salesperson, whether they're selling for their own business or selling for a corporation, if I could get every salesperson to just stop for a second and say, hey, what I do is really important and I deserve some respect. That, mm-hmm. I would have achieved my goal. And the second half of the karma statement is that, you know, I really wanted to give money to minority and female students because education changed my life. It really opened doors for me that I would have never, ever gone through otherwise. And so I felt that that was a very important part. I didn't want to profit from this book. I wanted to use the book as a way to give back.
What a generous gift that is. I mean, and the fact that you're giving to the it's a minority educational, is that right? It's an
yeah.
Educational, and it's, you know, there's so much need in our society to encourage and support, and with people like you who give so unconditionally with the profits from this book, I find that just such a gift. You talk a lot about soft skills like listening and
yes.
handling conflict, avoiding compromising situations, communicating directly and honestly. Are those initially a part of selling that has been discussed over years, or is that coming in more new now and primarily because you've started to implement it? I mean, was this always something that was part of selling? Did they use soft skills, or is it more common now?
I think in the last 10 years, more companies have recognized that the soft skills are what make the difference between your average performer and your outstanding performer. And this, it's true no place as much as it's true in management, sales management. I do a lot of work with sales managers, teaching them how to coach their people rather than manage them, because they've been told that their job is to communicate, you know, one way to their salespeople, get the numbers made, make sure everybody's working hard, and so on. But many times they tell their salespeople what needs to be done, but not how to do it. And when you shift from that perspective to coaching your salespeople, and you work with them to help them understand how to reach a goal, how to implement an action plan, it makes a huge difference in terms of not just their satisfaction, but their performance. And I think this recognition in corporations that coaching is an essential skill in a company that wants to grow sustainably and continue to be successful over the long term is a major shift in our business mm-hmm. climate.
And is there also a piece of salespeople that resist more of a compassionate side? Do they go back to old school ways? I mean, because there seems to be two schools of thought here. And do you find that some corporations are still kind of stuck in the old school ways of training their salespeople versus a new concept of more of a compassionate salesperson?
Yep. I still see many companies focusing their training on product training. You know, let's get our salespeople in, let's pump their heads full of all of the features and benefits, all the data about these products, let's teach them how far they can cut the price to close the sale, and then let's send them out there. And that kind of selling reinforces the stereotype, and in many cases, customers feel that they get burned by that approach. So they become even more resistant to actually talking with a salesperson on an honest level about what needs to be done.
And I would say that your purpose in writing this book, and correct me if I'm wrong, would be to kind of offer us all people who work within sales lessons of soft skills like effective listening and handling conflict to kind of look at it in a different aspect. Is that right? Was that the inspiration that created the book for you?
Yeah, I really wanted to put something together that was the whole package. Here are the basic steps, but here are the soft skills that make those steps effective. And make it clear to anyone reading the book that any of those areas are opportunities where you can grow and develop and get better. And that's ultimately the goal. When you're doing a job that you finally recognize is important, vitally important, and you begin to respect yourself and you respect your customer, then it naturally flows from that you want to constantly improve your skills. You want to do a better and better job of it. So bringing all those things together into one place was part of my goal.
And, you know, you have a very wonderfully detailed list, 10 tips for selling and living with soul. Can we go through these 10 aspects for soft sell in regard
sure.
to how those who are listening can maybe take some notes here? I find this, like, this is a life-changing concept that can really change the dynamics of how we interact with one another in our product, in our selling, and our support for one another. You start off with respect yourself and your customer, and easier sometimes said than done, because oftentimes when you're going into a sales meeting or a sale presentation, there's a little bit of, especially with the newbie salesperson, there's a little bit of that insecurity or fear of rejection, and it may not even be something that's an awareness or a consciousness, but there's that angst or that nervousness that's there. So in respecting ourselves and the customer, what does that look like, and how can we improve upon that?
Well, it starts with self-respect. And I think, you know, we need to shift our internal dialogue from I will succeed by making my quota to something similar to I succeed in direct proportion to how much I help my customers succeed. You know, my business grows as I help their business grow, which takes the focus off us and our short-term gain and takes it back to why our jobs are so worthy of respect. And I think
right.
in terms of getting past the nerves and the angst and the, oh, my God, they're going to think I'm just your stereotype salesperson, the more that we shift our mind from talking to listening,
mm-hmm.
the easier it is to overcome that. It's you know, the example I use when I teach salespeople is that a lot of people go to a party and they're terrified to talk to anybody. They don't know what to say. But if you go to that same party and you say, well, I'm not going to talk, I'm not going to tell people about myself, but I'm going to learn about 5 people at this party. I'm going to learn what they care about, who they are. It shifts the whole thing. Now you're asking questions and you're making connection, and you have nothing to be nervous about.
Right. That's a great way to look at it. Now, in regard to respecting yourself and, say, the salesperson's feeling a little nervous or a little uncertain, would a little bit of a power talk boost, a little bit of self-talk, be something that could help the salesperson in themselves to feel more confident and more respected of their profession, their integrity, and what they're doing, and having that come across to the customer? So would you advise, like, give yourself a little boost, a little pep talk, a little,
sure.
You know, because
sure.
there's that Go ahead.
In fact, I say in the book that people should have their own mission statement. You know, they should be very clear. And whether they say it in their head or whether they say it to the rear view mirror in the morning as they drive to work, you know, they need to be very clear. My work is important because my work helps other people achieve their goals. And that kind of self-talk really can lift you above the common concerns.
Right. And it also, you know, we start to believe what we tell ourselves, whether it's fact or fiction. So if we're telling ourselves, you know, we're an effective, positive, integrity-based salesperson, we're going to start to believe it after a while. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really important that we have that belief in our minds of how we want to live and who we want to be, because then we will gradually, day by day, move closer to that image.
Now, the other number two that you have here is recognize the importance of empathy. Talk to us a little about this.
That's the key, I think, to beginning any sales process is if you don't take the time to understand the other person and what their concerns are and what their ultimate goals are, then you don't have any way of knowing if you can help. Mm-hmm. So skipping that step and just assuming you can be helpful and launching into your product pitch and features and benefits really puts you back in that penalty box. It's so important to treat that person as a whole person with cares and concerns and ask the meaningful questions.
Now, empathy comes easily for some people, and other people may struggle more with having an empathetic nature. How can we become more aware of the other person if we don't have that natural peace within ourselves?
I think people can practice in a variety of areas, and I would recommend they start at home.
Right.
You see, so many people that have a hard time being empathetic also have poor communication with their spouses, their partners, their children. You know, try asking those folks some questions. Try saying back what you're actually hearing and see if you're on track. The more that we try to see things from another person's perspective, the more effectively we can understand whether our perspective has meaning for them.
And that would bring us to the third tip, which is listen to yourself and others with sensitivity. And you have that, recognizing that we each have our own history, experiences, and biases. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, this comes under the empathy aspect, because to have sensitivity for others, you're being empathetic. But, where can we increase that sensitivity and develop that? How can we shift our perception a little bit there?
Yeah, it's something that requires ongoing practice to put aside thoughts of ourselves and focus for as long as we can on what the other person is communicating. And this listening step is also about listening to ourselves, having empathy for ourselves. Because so many times we're doing something or we're saying something and we feel a little heartburn coming on. We feel a headache. That's our body telling us perhaps that we're out of step with what we really believe and what we really value. And it's easy to do that. It's easy, especially in the heat of a customer exchange, to forget that you're there for the long-term win. You're not just pushing a particular product of the week. So learning to listen to ourselves as well is very important to selling with soul.
And you have, which is I think a genius statement, you have seek first to understand and then to be understood. And I love that, because there's that takes you out of the ego and really puts you in a place of helping the other person.
Right. Actually a quote from Stephen Covey, who I think we all miss dearly.
Right, yes.
Who really put that emphasis on understanding the other person before you look at whether what you have to say will make a difference for them.
And then number four, you have practice persistence and patience.
Mm. Yeah, I don't have a lot of patience. And
me either.
So one of the things that I have to do is I have to constantly remind myself to go at the customer's pace. They will move through the steps of deciding whether to buy or not at their own emotional pace. They'll have to deal with all the various things that come up along the way. If I try to push them, if I try to make it happen faster, I'm only going to create resistance. So I need to be patient about another person's process and let them get there. And then persistence, I have a Mark Twain quote that says, if at first you don't succeed, try again, but then quit. No sense being a damn fool about it. And I think for a lot of us, we learn the most from our failures. And we have to try. We have to try and fail to really learn from our mistakes. So, you know, my motto of late has been, anything worth doing is worth doing really badly at first.
I like that. You can only improve.
That's right.
Now, how do we avoid rationalization, which is number 5?
Oh, my God. That may be our most highly developed human skill, don't you think?
Oh, yes, I would say the analyzing mind just takes over those times, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And we all want to feel right. You know, we want to feel that whatever action we took, whatever decision we made was the right one and the other person was wrong. but unless we look honestly at our actions and say, well, okay, maybe I didn't actually do that to benefit my customer. Maybe I actually did that because I thought it would get me a bigger commission check this week. The more honest we are with ourselves about why we do the things we do, the more we actually learn from them. And rather than rationalizing our missteps, forgiving ourselves is the key. We have to forgive ourselves for making mistakes, and we have to forgive other people for making mistakes. It's just part of being human. You know, we all make mistakes. Let's forgive and move on and not waste a lot of energy trying to rationalize why we did it.
Although I would say that within the realm of sales, the analyzing aspect is pretty dominant part of the brain, even though the intuitive part of the brain is also kicking in, giving you instincts and insights and awarenesses of product, person, customer. Is there a little bit of a link here between the intuitive and the analytical when one is doing a sales pitch or a sales presentation? I would imagine you have these both sides of your brain highly developed. I would believe that you go back and forth between intuitive and analytical. I understand that very well. I do the same myself.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a piece here where the intuitive becomes more developed in the sales presentation and the analytical kind of like is observing?
I think that's very true. I think the analytical is processing what we're seeing, what we're reacting to as we go. One thing we know is that we as human beings make our decisions emotionally first. People decide to buy emotionally, and then they find ways to justify it and rationalize it. You know, we take actions based on our emotion, and then we look for ways to explain why we did that. So that emotional part of our brain, that instinctive part of our brain, is very, very much at work in any kind of human connection, any kind of selling situation. And I'm not recommending that people put aside their analytical skills because I think they're very, very important. But I am suggesting that they recognize that the emotion is what's going to actually trigger action.
Okay. All right. And then number 6, you have embrace change, which I love this because this is singing to me here. Because as we know, you know, like you have here, change is a constant. So let's talk about embracing change because that really scares people to death. Oftentimes, change is the unknown, and they imagine the worst-case scenario.
That is so true. People don't like to change. Human beings
no.
don't like to change. We like our habit, our routine, our rituals. But everything is changing around us all the time. You know, if you look at just how technology has affected our world. I mean, when I was a kid, TV was a relatively new and exciting invention. And now, look, every child in elementary school seems to have their own little smartphone.
Right.
It's crazy fast how things have changed in our world. And so while we may not like the change, we may try to resist it. Resisting it is really wasting our energy. Wasting
right.
our resources. If we can find a way to embrace it, perhaps even a little piece at a time, it will bring us more in alignment with the very people we're trying to serve. I'll give a quick example. When I first, when personal assistant devices, the little electronic calendar schedule things first came out, I was still carrying my trusty Franklin planner, and a guy in a meeting one day watched me using Whiteout to make a bunch of corrections on it, and he said, why don't you have one of these? Look, I can change everything for the next 6 months with one keystroke. And I thought, oh, God, I don't want to learn how to do that. I don't want to learn how to do that. But you know what? I bought one. I stared at it for weeks. I finally learned how to do one thing on it. And then I asked him to help me, and in no time I was very efficient using it. And I could see the benefits of having it rather than carrying my Whiteout and my hardcover calendar around with me. So, I mean, it's one tiny example, but you have to sort of tackle it a bite at a time and not be afraid to ask for help. Ask somebody
right.
who's comfortable with it to help walk you through the transition.
And, you know, and change is one of those things where when you are facing change, resisting it is pretty futile because the
yes.
change is already
yeah.
in motion. So to
yeah,
it resist
already happened.
It,
so.
Yes.
It's
like,
reality.
That's right. It's like, okay, you know, it's probably best if you're feeling that need to change it to just kind of sit down and take a deep breath and just start to accept that change of energy that's happening before you go out and do anything, because, you know, it's inevitable. And
yep.
to embrace it really has that change working for you than against you. So
yeah.
it's, you know, it's a beautiful way of looking at change. And number seven, you have, and I love this because I believe this too, be a lifelong learner. So many people think that, okay, when I get here, I'll be done. I won't have
yeah.
to learn anymore. And life is all about change and learning.
Yes, it is.
So talk to us a little bit about how we can really benefit from being a lifelong learner.
Well, so many of the things that we're sure we know, bless you, are already
Thank
out
you.
Of date. You know, they're already out of date. And we have to recognize that to be our own best selves, we have to be learning all the time. If I don't know more about my world today than I knew yesterday, then I'm falling behind. You know, I love Einstein's view of it. He said intelligence isn't having knowledge. It's knowing where to find it. And that's
mm-hmm.
the thing we need to remember. It's not so much about what we have locked in our memories. It's about how good we are at finding and using new information.
Right. Now, number eight brings us to live every day as though it will be recorded for posterity. Oh, that can be exciting and scary.
It is scary. You know, when I think about how this would, you know, if I decide to take these actions, how would they look if they were being recorded on 60 Minutes? You know,
yes.
it tells me pretty quickly, do I want this to be part of my legacy or not? We all have pressure to make decisions all day long, and where we put our time, where we invest our resources, all of those things add up to who we are. You know, we are what we do in people's minds. So, yeah, I think it's very important to remember that. Life is short. And what I choose to do today, is that going to build the legacy I really want to leave?
Right, right. And number nine, you have seek philosophical alignment.
Mm-hmm. And that's really all about being that same person at work that you are at home. It's really about finding the harmony based on your core values so that you treat others with respect, you cherish having a reputation for integrity, and you work hard at developing and maintaining good empathy for other people.
Wonderful. And number 10 is practice daily reflection on what you value most. And that's individual.
Yes, it is. And, you know, you may have career goals right now that are primary for you, or you may have family goals or health goals. But, you know, ask yourself each day if you've honored that value today. Did you actually do anything to move that goal forward? Because it's too easy to lose sight of where we want to be in the day-to-day urgencies. So this daily reflection, whether you meditate, whether you journal, whether you just sit in your car with a latte, that period of reflection is so important because it's the time we tune back into our inner compass and find out if we're going in the right direction.
Okay, wonderful. And you have... In 2004, you started a coaching program where you coach many salespeople in regard to more of a compassionate nature as a salesperson. And others, the listeners can find you there at your website website www.sparkercoaching.com. Let's talk. We have about 3 minutes left, and I want you to be able to touch on that for our audience. So I'm going to give you the floor.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I teach a sales process, a very ethical sales process called customer-centric selling. And when I teach it, I add to it my own selling with soul, soft skills and pointers. And I also do a lot of coaching with sales managers and with individual salespeople, helping them work their way through different challenges and tasks. That's my real mission, I feel, is when I see salespeople, their eyes light up and they say, wow, my work is important, I am important, and I can do my work with integrity. That tells me that my work has value. So there is a monthly newsletter that people can subscribe to on the website. I also do a weekly blog. And all of these things focus on doing the job of selling, whether it's selling yourself and your private practice, your own business, or selling for a company, with soul, with respect, integrity, and empathy.
Wonderful, wonderful. Sharon Parker, you have been such an enlightening guest to have on our show today. Thank you so much for being with us. And thank you so much for writing this book, Selling with Soul, S-O-U-L, Sharon V. Parker. And I suggest anyone who has to sell themselves or a product to buy this to get a different glimpse of how you can sell effectively, coming from heart and soul and not sacrificing your integrity. Thank you so much, Sharon, for being my guest today. And I want to direct everybody again to your website at sparkercoaching.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for your wonderful wisdom and this book. And thank you again for being my guest today, Sharon.
Thank you, Lisa. I've enjoyed every minute.
It has been a true gift for our listeners, I know. I have a few people here sending me emails already, so I will direct them your way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. God bless you. I look forward to talking to you next week. Have a blessed week. Thank you again, Sharon. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.